Hey, everybody, and welcome to a new Dave Pasch podcast. I'm your host, ESPN and Arizona Cardinals broadcaster Dave Pasch. After a couple of months off, we are back, and in a big way, with first-year Arizona Cardinals general manager Monty Ossenfort. I think after you listen to this conversation with Monty, you'll really learn a lot about what it's like in the draft room on draft night. In particular, we're going to talk in depth about how the Cardinals ended up trading down from number 3 and then trading back up to number 6 to grab Paris Johnson from Ohio State, and how close it came with the pressure on and the clock ticking on the Cardinals to make that deal with Houston to move down from number 3.
It was intense. It was good, but I would have to go back and look at the tape. I don't think anybody in our room was panicking. I think we had a plan, and the time was ticking, and time was of the essence, and you know, we were able to finally get and push it across the goal line.
Monty is the talk nationally amongst the media members about draft night. 3 trades with 3 teams in the first 34 picks. The acquisition of a first-round pick for 2024 and 2 third-round picks for next year as well. Monty was very busy, and he goes deep into all of those decisions on draft night and what it was like for him in his first year in the big chair, making the decisions to make trades and to draft players. We're also going to talk about some of the guys who've been on the roster, the latest on DeAndre Hopkins, Buda Baker, Isaiah Simmons, and the health of Kyler Murray. We'll also talk with Monty about his history, spending all those years with the New England Patriots, his time with Tennessee. We'll even go back to his playing days in college at Minnesota Morris, where for a brief period of time, he was a radio show host. All that and more coming up with Arizona Cardinals general manager Monty Ossenfort. We are presented by BetMGM, the official sports betting partner of the Arizona Cardinals, and by Gila River Resorts and Casinos. Sign up today with BetMGM, the official partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Use code CARDS1000 and get back up to $1,000 in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager, Arizona only. New customer offer. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. All right, time for our sit-down with Arizona Cardinals general manager, Monty Ossenfort. So, Monty, I got a chance to meet you briefly, maybe 2 months ago, 3 months ago, the last podcast I actually did, which was with Michael, brought me up and introduced me to you, but I haven't really had a chance to get to talk to you much. So, first time we've had a chance to really sit and chat. I'm curious, first of all, what's this whole process been like? Because you get hired and you're all in. You're going 100 miles an hour. What's it been like personally? What's it been like professionally for you?
Well, professionally, it all culminated in these last few days. It was, you know, it was a lot of work here from a lot of fronts, a lot of people from the scouting department to the coaching staff to trainers, and all facets of football operations contributed to this past weekend. So it was a nice just ending to just a lot of work that had went in. You know, it's been a challenge. You know, when you have this type of transition, you're away from your family. A lot of people are away from their families. You're living in a hotel. You're living in temporary housing. But you know what? It's also a blessing because you can just focus in on the job, and you know, because there is a lot to do. There's a lot to do when that transition comes in, and you know, there was a lot of things that we wanted to focus on with the draft and just getting the right types of people from the All-Star game process through the combine and then through our 30 visit process. So that was a big focus of ours. And, you know, there was a lot of things to juggle, but a lot of people stepped up and a lot of people contributed to, you know, what we hope was a winning effort this past weekend.
You talked about being away from your family as a dad. You know, how challenging has that been for you? What's it been like communicating with your kids, who this is probably the first time you've been gone this long?
Yeah, it's been a challenge for all of us. And you know, we came to a pretty good routine here over the last couple months, where you know, I'm an early morning guy, and so on my drive in, Nashville is back on Central Time, and so on my drive in, it was really breakfast time. The girls were getting ready for breakfast for school, and so my 15-minute drive in to work was a great time for us just to chat over the phone and get connected for, hey, what's going on today, and what's the plan, anything special at school today. And then, you know, FaceTime has been a lifesaver. That's been great to just connect and see faces. And, you know, but it's been tough. Missed a few sporting events. This past weekend, my oldest daughter had her last volleyball tournament in Birmingham. But, you know, thank God, technology, I was able to pull up the iPad and watch her games. You know, so I wasn't there, but I tried to connect as much as possible. So I'm excited. Going to take a couple of days and get home to see them. But excited for them to get out here to the Valley and call this home.
So your daughter's playing volleyball. Is it club volleyball? Is she, so she must be pretty good if she's traveling at pretty young age.
Yeah. She, you know, so her mom, my wife Shannon, she was a collegiate volleyball player, and you know, my oldest is involved in club volleyball, and she's really enjoyed that. So, you know, it's been tough missing out on that, but you know, I know my wife has been there to support her and to help her out. My wife actually coached her school team this past year at our school, and so, you know, but my wife took a step back for the club season, and sure. But that's been great.
You were an athlete too. You played quarterback, Minnesota Morris, which is where? And I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, and I don't know where Minnesota Morris is.
So. Yeah, allegedly an athlete, I would say that. Morris is in the middle of nowhere. It's in about as far west part of the state of Minnesota, but right in the middle, so west central Minnesota. Tiny little town. It's a tiny school. When I was there, we were a Division II school. They've since dropped down to Division III. But you know, hey, we had a lot of fun, met a lot of friends there. We weren't a good team. That's kind of an insult to say we were a bad team to bad team. So but we had a lot of fun, and we worked hard, and it was a good experience for me.
And I'm trying to find information about you other than, you know, what's obviously been out there and. Through either the Cardinals or the Titans or going back to the Patriots. And one thing I caught on Wikipedia, and I always have to ask because Wikipedia is the worst. There's been things on me that are not correct on Wikipedia that I've had to tell people, like, hey, that's not true. So you were a radio show host in college? Is that accurate?
Man,
is that true? And did you think about going into broadcasting?
You're digging deep here. Okay, you're digging deep. So at our tiny little school, there was a student-run radio station that I'm not sure that the signal went out much further than the four blocks of campus. But there was a Saturday. I can't remember. No, I think it was a Sunday morning show for 2 hours that, you know, you just fill blocks of time. And so, you know, me and a couple buddies, we were screwing around and, this would be cool. And, you know, I think it lasted for a few months, but I think they ran us off. I don't think listenership was real high. So
broadcasting was not going to be part of your future.
Nah, I got out of that quick. Yeah.
But scouting was. When did you make the choice to go down this road, knowing, you know, how hard it is to work your way up? You're already, you talked about being away from your family now, but that's something as a scout traveling over the years you've learned to get used to. What made you decide to go this route in terms of staying involved in football?
Yeah, when my playing career was over, I kind of was at a little bit of a crossroads, didn't quite know where I was going to go, and thought about going in the coaching realm. And, you know, it's something always about personnel, the personnel. I'd always was interested in the draft and kind of when I was young, reading up on personnel moves and trades and things like that. And so, you know, I didn't think coaching was the right path for me, and so I decided, hey, this is an avenue that I kind of wanted to go try going down. And so when I left undergraduate from Morris, decided to go to graduate school at Ohio University for a couple years, and they have a sports administration program there, and went there for a couple years, and through the connections from Ohio University, I was able to land an internship. My first job in the NFL down, you know, actually first I had a training camp internship with the Minnesota Vikings, hauling mattresses around a dorm room, installing window air conditioning units, you know, real glorious stuff. And so that was my first exposure to the NFL. And then after my 2 years in Ohio, found a year-long internship down in Houston with the Texans in personnel. And at that point I was hooked and just had a real fortunate along the way to meet some great people and learn and to have a bunch of things break my way for me to kind of just move up the ranks.
Was Mike Tice the head coach of the Vikings then? It wasn't Denny, was it?
It was, man, that's a great question. At that point, it was,
what year was it?
It was 2001.
I think it might have still been Denny.
Think it was Denny. Okay. It was Moss's rookie year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Moss.
That was Denny then.
It was Denny. It was actually, unfortunately, it was the summer that Corey Stringer passed away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was that. Then that was That was a tough tough situation there in Mankato where we had training camp. So that was the year. Yeah.
And so you were at the Patriots, obviously, for a long time, most recently with the Titans, but 15 years overall in New England. What was your biggest takeaway when you look back and think, hey, this was something that I held on to that I learned from Coach Belichick or one of the many other personnel guys who've gone on to be GMs like Jason Light?
Yeah. Boy, we could be here for 2 hours talking about that because, I just extremely fortunate to have that experience of being there. But you know, I think the biggest thing for me is just taken from there is just the importance of building an entire football program, that there's nothing that can stand alone and be on its own. Everything is connected, whether it's the coaching or the scouting, but even to the strength training, to training, to nutrition, to how the team travels, to, you know, the PR group. Everything is on the same page. Everything is pointed in one direction, and that's to winning. And so, you know, that's something out there's really no secret sauce. Everybody always brings up, oh, the Patriot way, and there's some, you know, magical formula or some secret pill. Like there really isn't, other than, you know, people knowing what their job is and how they contribute to a winning effort and doing it at a high level.
Do you have any particular interactions with Coach Belichick that you recall? I don't know if you've had a chance to get to know Ron Wolfley at all, who I do the Cardinal games with. Wolf was the special teams captain for Bill in Cleveland and still talks to him. Like, they still have a relationship. He's had him on his radio show, and he's got great stories that really tell you all you need to know, that basically Bill hasn't changed. Like, he's the same now as he was then in terms of how he interacts with players, how he interacts with people on his staff. Is there anything that you recall, like, man, that was a great conversation, or one that was, like, embarrassing where he ripped you or something?
Well, I mean, I'd say this. I mean, Coach Belichick is he's always been, he's been a person that I've learned an immense amount from. And, you know, he's been extremely generous with his time here since I got this job, just being a sounding board for me and just being there to talk through some things with. And he's been tremendous with that. You know, I think my first when I was a lower level scout in New England, 1 year we were prepping for the draft. And at the time I was living in Colorado, so I wasn't even in the office. But, you know, I had a project to do. And for some reason, I got on a project of looking at special teams players for the draft. And so, you know, it was the year that Matt Slater was coming out of UCLA. And so Matt Slater was one of the guys that I happened to look at. And, you know, I looked at 10, 12 players. And, you know, Matt Slater stood out as just a guy that an outstanding special teams player. And so, you know, I, as a lower level scout, you didn't have a lot of interaction with Coach Belichick. And so, you know, I completed this project and sent it in and you know, passed it up to Scott Pioli, to Nick Casario, some guys that I had worked for. And, you know, I woke up one morning with a time change in Colorado and, you know, I checked my phone and, I had an email from Coach Belichick and, like, you know, kind of groggy to snap up and like, I got to read this one, you know? So it was Coach Belichick, and it was him asking me about the project that I did and specifically about Matt. And so, you know, that's something that really was my first, like, real direct interaction with Coach Belichick on a one-to-one basis. And just, you know, that he had taken the time to read what I had put before him. You know, that was kind of something that's always going to stick with me.
I remember watching, I think it was called The Two Bills. It was a 30 for 30 with him and Bill Parcells, and watching Coach Belichick's reverence for Coach Parcells. And again, hearing from Wolf, other guys that played for Bill, I know it's all business with him, but at the same time, like, I feel that he respects and appreciates guys that went to war for him, whether it was a player or somebody in your position. Is that something that you found as well?
Absolutely. I think that's absolutely fair. I mean, Bill is an extremely focused individual, and he's focused on winning and doing what's best for the football team. And I think when he sees, you know, other people, that's his goal, is to surround the rest of his organization with people that have that same mindset. And he has a real appreciation for people that can really put the team before themselves.
So you'd talked after the draft in your press conference about the rush of everything you did. And I'm curious because, you know, we're not in that room. We have no idea what it's like to be in that room. What was it like to be the GM on draft night? You've been in the rooms before, but you've not been that guy making all the calls, having the final say. What was it like?
It was different. It was certainly different. You know, I think that kind of dawned on me in the couple days leading up to the draft. And, you know, in the past, you prepare for a draft and you're like, man, I hope this happens. And if this happens, I think we should do this. But now there's no more, I think we should do this. It's, we're going to do this. And, you know, also that's a big mantle to take on, you know? And so, you know, that's something that I did, you know, think about. It did cross my mind going in, but, you know, I think for me personally, like, I think the thing that really helped me, over that first hour of the draft where there was so much action is we were prepared, and the team, our group of individuals upstairs, we were ready. And, you know, things could have shook out a different way, and we would have been fine. We would have been fine with that too. I just think that the time that we prepared and the scenarios that we tried to walk through, you know, things didn't happen exactly the way we thought they would, but we had also talked ad nauseum about different ways that things could happen, and we were ready. We reacted, and, you know, ultimately, I think we made decisions that were good for the team.
How much of what you're talking about right now in terms of things didn't go exactly how we thought, or we weren't sure what was going to happen, it felt like the world wasn't sure, based on, you know, it just seemed like everything was coming down to number two. Like, I kept hearing they don't like C.J. Stroud in Houston, and it clearly was subterfuge, right? It clearly was put out there. Were you guys hearing that as well? Like, were you guys unsure, hey, is it going to be Stroud? Is it going to be Will Anderson? Are they going to look to trade down? Is it going to be somebody else?
Yeah, and I think we looked at all those scenarios, Dave. I think, you know, we had no idea. I mean, we felt pretty good about what was going to happen at one. Number two, we had no idea. So we had to talk about all those scenarios that you just said. Hey, if they take this quarterback or a different quarterback, or do they go a position player? And we had to talk through all those scenarios about who may or may not be interested in moving up based on what happened at number two. So we worked through those, and, you know, you could drive yourself crazy going with, there's a million different scenarios, and well, what if this happens? Well, that would never happen. Well, oh, really? Like, you just don't know with a draft, you know? So, we worked through those, and we felt good about, you know, just working through those different scenarios, and we were as surprised as anybody when number two came off the board.
Okay, so number two comes off the board. Is it right away, okay, we've worked through these scenarios, so scenario X has happened, let's execute that plan?
Correct. And I think, you know, I think the discussions on this, the number three pick, they really started back at the combine. And, you know, hey, you know, at that point it was more, I don't know if we're going to pick at number three, but if we don't pick, would you be interested in coming up? So, you know, we started those conversations back then. And then I would say the week leading up to the draft, and specifically the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before the draft, those talks really started to get more concrete. And so it was a goal of mine I wanted to go into Thursday with parameters of what was going to happen, so that no matter what happened at number two, I didn't want a cold call to come out of the blue at number three and us start from ground zero. So we had multiple teams that we had talked to Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. You know, hey, if this happens, or if our guy's there, you know, this is what it would look like. This is what we'd be interested in. Okay, all right, we'll see what happens. And so then when number two did come off the board, you know, there were some teams that weren't interested anymore in coming up to number three. There were some teams that were still interested in coming to number three, but there was we weren't starting from zero. We kind of had a ballpark of what we were trying to do. And, you know, ultimately we were able to work through and come up with a deal that worked.
So we're watching the draft, and it feels like the trade is made as we're coming down to the wire. Was it like that for you in the room, or was it calm? Were the conversations very typical of what you expected, and it just took time to kind of get it to the league so they could announce it?
I would say it did come down. The time was ticking down, and that was a product of, you know, when the number two pick goes in, the clock starts immediately, right? So that there's no lag to, hey, let's walk up there and announce it. Like, it's going. And so there's some time to, hey, we got to check back with all the teams that we've had discussions with. Hey, are you still interested? No. Are you still interested? Yes. And then so you go down the line, and so then you go through that process. All right, so now we're down to X number of teams that are interested in coming up. Okay, so this team, we know that this team was here on the deal. This team was here on the deal. Okay, which one do we like better out of the two? All right, we like this one. Let's go back and see if we can talk. And so as we were going through that, you know, it helped that I have a personal relationship with Nick Caserio in Houston. Have a lot of respect for Nick as a person. He's been a mentor to me. He's been a friend to me. Our families are close. You know, I say that other than to say just the conversation was easy between Nick and I. And, you know, so it got to a point where, hey, you know, this is what we're offering. And, you know, Nick, I need it to include this. And then Nick can tell me, yeah, you know what, I'm not doing that. And so I don't take offense to that. I know Nick, I have that relationship with Nick, and he can tell me, no, I'm not doing that. And so eventually there was some back and forth there, and the clock's going. And I think it was around, I don't know, 2.5 minutes maybe, where, you know, we got the couple deals written up on the board and a couple teams. And so then, okay, Nick, I think we're at a spot where we're close here. It's this and this for this, this, and this. Are you in? Yep, I'm in. Okay, great, call it in. And so at 2.5 minutes, we both hang up the phone, and our cap guy, Matt Harris, then has to call the league and repeat the trade terms to them. On Nick's end, their cap guy or whoever is handling trades for them has to call the league and turn their pick in, or turn the terms of the trade. We both have to say the exact same trade, so the league knows that nobody's trying to pull something here. And then so once that happens, the trade becomes official, and now Houston's got to take another step and call the player, in this case Will Anderson, get him on the phone and make sure he's okay. And so all that happened, I would say, give or take, in a span of 2.5 minutes.
Oh my goodness.
it was intense. It was good. But again, I would have to go back and look at the tape. I don't think anybody in our room was panicking. I would, you know, football people always got to go back and look at the tape.
Sure,
so,
right.
But I think, you know, I think we had a plan, and the time was ticking, and time was of the essence. And but, you know, we were able to finally get and push it across the goal line.
First of all, it's fascinating. And I think for the people that are listening to this, that gives them some inside knowledge as to what it's like. And there's a lot of stuff you said there that I didn't know. I didn't know that you have to actually get Will Anderson, the player that's going to get picked, on the phone to let him know exactly what's going on.
Sure.
I didn't know how that information was relayed to a guy, hey, you're going to get picked, but the team that is picking at number three is no longer picking at number three.
Correct. Yep. And that's and really, we are ahead of – we are what you guys are watching on TV. We're ahead of that. And so, you know, maybe it was different for Will being in the green room, but for most guys, like they're sitting there watching on TV, and we're probably like two picks ahead of them. So we call somebody and tell them, hey, we're going to, you know, your name's going to be coming across here. It's going to be in a few minutes. So there is a little bit of a lag there.
Was Paris Johnson always the guy, meaning if you had to pick him at three, would you have? And if so, you know, him being the guy for you, when did you know? When did you guys make the decision, hey, this is the guy we want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think we had multiple options at various points. I mean, I think Paris was in the discussion, you know, wherever we were going to end up picking. You know, I think for me personally, we spent a lot of time with Paris starting at the combine with him. We had a formal interview with him there. He was a very impressive kid there. But really, what solidified it for me is when Paris came in for his 30 visit, and we got a chance to spend the entire day with him, and just to see the type of kid that he was, and really those 30 visits have nothing to do with his ability on the field. It's all about the person and how he interacts, and how smart is he, and how mature and dependable is he. And so my meeting with Paris, my meeting with all the prospects is really at the end of the day, after we spent, you know, kind of put them through the ringer and gone through things. And my meeting with Paris was at the end of the day. And, you know, when by the time my meeting with him was done, he walked out, and I knew that Paris was made up of the type of stuff that we would want to add to our program. And, you know, there's a lot of people that you can say that about. And so, sure, I hope that we would get a chance to add Paris. And, you know, ultimately we did. So and we were happy with that.
So you trade down and then you trade back up, obviously, to make the selection at six to get Paris. How did you know when to move back up. Did you know when you made the trade with Houston, hey, we're going to move back up. Part of this deal is we're going to use what we just got or some of the other picks we have to move back up. And when did you pull that trigger?
Yeah, that was definitely a part of any of our trade down discussions, is that we wanted any trade where we were bouncing back or moving back, we wanted to have enough currency in that trade to claw back up, but still come out net positive on the first trade. And so didn't know if we were going to be able to pull that off. Like, that all sounds great, but you need the other side of the trade to work out as well. And so, you know, as we were talking through the scenarios leading up to the week, we knew that, hey, if the further you jump back up, it's going to cost more. And so, you know, so those were things that we had considered. We were ready. We made several calls. As soon as we went back to number 12, we immediately started making calls at various levels. And, you know, we had to wait for the number four pick to go across. And so then we were making calls, and finally we came to a team that was willing to take the deal that we were offering, and then we just went ahead and made that move.
Second round, you take B.J. Ojulari from LSU, who I did not have LSU this year, but had them 2 years ago, so a little familiar with him, familiar with his brother. Mm-hmm. What do you think he can be? I think there were some people. Look, you guys got praised by everybody in the media for the moves you made. There were some people, I just remember at the time seeing it, they were a little surprised at the pick. What do you think BJ can be, and why did you guys take him at that spot?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, with BJ, we saw, you know, a player that has played at a high level in one of the best conference in the country, the SEC. We see a guy that has a good get off. He's fast off the edge. He can bend. He's got a good mix of speed to power, of quickness, of counter moves. You know, and the thing that really impressed us about BJ is not only meeting with him at the combine, but then also, you know, BJ wears the number 18 jersey at LSU, and the number 18 jersey is a pretty big honor that they give out, that the staff, the coaches there, they vote on, and really that's given to a player that exhibits the top program characteristics, not necessarily the best player, but the guy that works hard, does things right, that goes about things the right way. And that was really important to us. So, you know, not only BJ's ability on the field to rush the passer, to set the edge, to do multiple things in our defense, but also the makeup of BJ was really attractive to us at that point.
John Gaines, you guys take in the fourth round. How important was it for you to really address the offensive line in this draft?
Yeah, and I think line of scrimmage players are always going to be important to us. You know, I think the game starts up there on both sides of the ball, and you know, so I think that was definitely an area that we wanted to address. You know, with John, an interesting guy. You know, played mainly guard at UCLA, but also saw time at center. Mm-hmm. And then when he went to the All-Star game, he played at the East-West All-Star game that was in Vegas. He worked even more so at center. So, you know, those interior guys that have that versatility to play multiple positions, that's always going to be intriguing. And then our ability to meet with him, our scouts to meet with him in Las Vegas, and then also for us to continue the process from the combine through the Zoom process. You know, Zoom has allowed us to reach out and just logistically be more efficient with our time. But John did an extremely good job with our coaches on the Zoom, just liked his makeup and his intellect and his ability to handle the center position, handle the guard position. You know, so that was attractive about adding John to our group.
So you look at the quarterback room, look, nobody in the NFL is like Kyler, but, you know, Colt and Kyler are pretty different. They're on different ends of the spectrum. Where do you think Clayton Tune, who you guys took in the fifth round from Houston, where does he fit there? What did you guys see in him that you think, you know, at some point, if we had to play this kid, we think he could go in and win for us?
Yeah, I mean, and we'll see how that all shakes out. I mean, we got a long way to go here. Sure. We got to get Clayton here and you know, get him indoctrined to our offense and get him in the group. But, you know, with Clayton, we did have an interesting perspective with him. You know, he was a participant down at the Senior Bowl this year. And at the time, our current quarterback coach now, Izzy Wolfork, was with Cleveland at the time. And he had a chance to coach down in the Senior Bowl. And one of his, Clayton was on his team. So we had a positive impression. Izzy talked very highly of Clayton coming out of there. And, you know, Clayton was a highly productive player. And, you know, I think with a guy like Clayton, you know, he's put up good passing numbers and he's obviously got throwing talent. But he's also got good athleticism for a bigger quarterback. I mean, he ran well at the combine. He ran for, I want to say, over 500 yards this year in Houston's offense. And so, you know, I think he does bring some versatility, that he's not just a pocket passer, that he can do some things outside the pocket, play extension, some RPO type stuff. So we're excited about adding him to our group, and we'll see where that shakes out.
Just a few more rapid fire. We'll get you out of here. I really appreciate the time, Monty. Kyler's recovery. Do you guys have a sense yet of when Kyler's going to be available to play?
Yeah, I mean, Kyler's here every day. Kyler's grinding. He's working hard. He's getting better. He's improving every day. You know, I don't have a timeline. I don't have an update on that. You know, Kyler is, we're going to put him out there when he's ready, and he's doing everything he can now. He's in meetings. He's learning. He's trying to take in the new offense and doing what he can on that front. He just can't be out on the field right now, and he's just physically not ready to do that. But I know he's doing everything he can, and when he's ready, we'll get him out there, and we're excited to get him back out there.
This obviously is not the first time that you've been part of an organization where you've got veteran players that are unhappy. They either want to be traded or they want a contract extension, or you've got players like D-Hop that have a huge cap number. I'm talking about Buddha and D-Hop in particular. Now that you're in the chair and you're making the call, how have you managed those requests/situations?
Yeah, and I think the key to both those situations is communication. And both D-Hop and Buddha have been great with communicating with me back and forth with their, you know, their representation. So I think, you know, understanding that players have opinions and ideas and things that go through their head, hey, that's human nature. We all have that. That happens for all of us. But I think just continuing to have those conversations and keeping them informed in our thought process and the things that we have going on here. I mean, it's exciting here right now. There's a good energy in the building, and you know, I think the guys that are here that have been working are seeing that and seeing some of the things that we're doing and some of the changes that we made. So we're excited about that, and I think we're just going to continue to keep those lines of communication open.
All right, last one. Isaiah Simmons, you guys deciding not to pick up the option. What all went into that choice?
Yeah. So, you know, I think those are discussions. You know, I wouldn't read anything other than, you know, that just probably wasn't the best decision for us to do right now, just as a team. You know, we're excited about working with Isaiah. We think he's extremely talented and has a lot to offer, versatility in our defense. But just right now, I think that the decision to not pick up that option right now is just probably the best for the team right now.
Hey, man, I really appreciate this. I think if you're a Cardinal fan, you got a lot out of this, and you get to know Monty Ossenfort a little bit more. So appreciate you stopping by, man.
Thanks for the time. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
You bet.
Terrific stuff from Monty. My biggest takeaway, and I'm hoping this is yours as well, is just how good of a guy Monty is. Very personable, professional, polite. And I think for you guys out there and for me as well, it's just great to get brought inside that draft room and what it's really like when the pressure's on, the clock is ticking, you've got to make a deal, and the relationships that these guys have with one another. It's a very tight-knit community in the scouting world. And to be able to make deals with guys you know is very helpful, and because there's honest conversations going on about players and draft picks that you can get. And when you're in that 15-minute time window and you've got to pull the trigger, just the kind of pressure that you're dealing with. And also the fact, too, I thought was really interesting, was that just like us, even Monty and the rest of the league wasn't sure exactly what Houston was going to do at number two, and then how that triggered so many different scenarios for the Cardinals and for other teams in the NFL. So great to catch up with Monty on a lot of things. Hope you really enjoyed that. One of the things we didn't get a chance to talk about is the new uniforms. And with all the excitement around the Cardinals surrounding the draft picks and all the trades, the uniform unveil was recent and was obviously a big story. We're going to go behind the scenes with the latest Cardinals flight plan. It airs Thursday for the first time at noon on the Cardinals YouTube channel. You can go inside what happened on that night and also what went into the Cardinals making the decision to go with the new uniforms Really good stuff. My favorite, the all white. If I had to pick, I love them all, but the all white to me was the coolest uniform the Cardinals have ever had. I can't wait to see the Cardinals bust those unis out. Maybe week one, depending on the schedule. Obviously, that comes out May 11th. We'll know for sure who the Cardinals are playing week one. We're presented by BetMGM, the official sports betting partner of the Arizona Cardinals, and by Gila River Resorts and Casinos. You can follow us on Twitter at PashPod. You can also rate us. Tell us what you think by going to your podcast platform. Thanks to you for listening to another edition of the Dave Pash Podcast, and thanks again to our guest, Arizona Cardinals General Manager, Monty Ossenfort.